Good morning. My name is Mike Niehaus. I am here this morning to talk about reducing the network impact of Windows 10 feature and quality updates using peer-to-peer, the longest title ever. The topic, at least, is somewhat interesting. We have some changes in the way that we deliver Windows 10, and even to a lesser extent, previous operating systems as well, as far as patches and feature updates go. So we want to spend the next 75 minutes or so talking about what those challenges are and looking at some of the solutions that we have in place to help with reducing the impact of those challenges. Title itself is kind of entertaining. They made us at one point go through the titles of all of our sessions and change them so that they started with a verb. So out of curiosity, when you're bored and back in your room, look through all the titles of all the sessions and notice they all start with verbs. We had to have a meeting where we went through all the titles and changed them to start with a verb because we're all about action. So let's get into the action. First, we need to kind of set some background information, introducing Windows as a service. I have a 75-minute session on this tomorrow where we'll spend the entire session talking about this, but it's important to understand that we're talking about this in the context of Windows as a service. We've changed the way that we build Windows, where we have the Insider Preview program, and we're regularly releasing new builds so that you can see the progress as we go along and provide feedback to us. We've changed the way that we deploy Windows 10. We're using an in-place upgrade process to deploy the feature updates as they come out. And we've changed the overall servicing process for the monthly updates that we deploy out to the PCs. That impacts us all the way through the life cycle of the operating system. And as a result, we need to kind of dig in deeper and see what that actually ends up looking like. One thing to point out, since we're talking about it at this particular second, is we've released a set of documentation related to this within the last week or so. So let me see if I can switch over to my PC. If you go to aka.ms/waas, Windows as a Service, that's the main entry point for our documentation that we recently posted, really trying to explain all of the different aspects of this. Included in that, obviously, is this peer-to-peer concept that we'll talk more about. So we have sections in there specifically about optimizing update delivery for Windows 10 updates. We'll get deeper into the conversations around that, but make sure you check out that documentation. Visit aka.ms/waas. And read through the overviews and the detailed how-to documents that we've published. The more specific item that we need to talk about for this session are really two things: quality updates and feature updates. Quality updates are those updates that come out every month, the Patch Tuesday type updates. With Windows 10, we changed those to be fully cumulative. So each one that comes out contains all the previous fixes. Over time, then that update continues to grow as it gets new fixes added into it. We also have feature updates. These contain, obviously, new features. So we release these roughly twice per year. I think we've officially published 2 to 3 times per year. This year, we announced that we would only have the one update, the anniversary update. Next year in 2017, we'll have 2 more updates based on our plans right now. So these are effectively full sets of media, full operating system bits that get deployed out to each of the PCs. So we implemented all of this in Windows 10, and we've also looked at making changes in Windows 7 and 8.1. You probably have seen the blog post where we've talked about that. We'll have more details to share around that hopefully in the next few days. But the process that we're trying to do is simplify overall the updating that we do for all the OSs that we have. So we want to move to a model where we have fewer updates released each month and fewer then to worry about. That then does have an impact overall, though, on how you deploy these and really what the impact's going to be on your network overall. When we look at feature updates specifically that we come out with about twice per year, for an X64 OS, the size is about 3.5 gig. Each one is about 3.5 gig. So each time we release a new feature update, you had to deploy a 3.5 gig package out to each of the PCs. It's a fairly consistent size. We are trying to look at ways to reduce this. We'll talk about that a little bit more in the as we get to the end of the session, but this is the size that you need to be able to deploy within your network. Now, what most people don't think about then is the monthly updates. The monthly updates, because they're cumulative, grow over time. When we started off with the Windows 10 1511 release back in November of 2015, that size was pretty small. It was like 75 meg. Over time, it's grown. The most recent update that came out in on Patch Tuesday in September was just over a gig. That's a pretty good size, and based on the trend line that you can see there, it's just going to continue growing. So basically what we're looking at is about an average per month of 1 gig per PC in updates. Fortunately, most PCs don't need to grab a gigabyte's worth of stuff, but a lot of them will, especially right now if you're using System Center Configuration Manager. We'll get into the details of why that is and what we're looking at to try to solve that problem so that it can just download the delta, the actual changes that occur from month to month. But we do have other technologies that can help with that, like peer-to-peer distribution, which is why we're talking more about that today. So try to do the math. If you look at those feature updates that are 3.5 gig that we release about every 6 months or so, we would do 4 of those over a period of 2 years. 4 of those over a period of 2 years is about 14 gigabytes worth of traffic per PC, spread over 24 months. Compare that to security updates, those Patch Tuesday updates that we come out with. About a gigabyte per month on average, 24 months, that's 24 gigabytes per PC. Now, you might think that, okay, that's also spread over 24 months, but I'm willing to bet a lot of you have policies in place that say you need to deploy those updates within a period of days. So assuming you have 3 days to deploy those updates to meet your internal SLAs for deploying security fixes, that basically means those 24 gig are spread over 36 days. That's a lot of traffic to move in that short period of time. So that's going to be the bigger challenge. That's going to impact your network more. That's what we're trying to focus on first, to try to put solutions in place to address that size. Now, for those of you who are looking at LTSB, at least with the feature updates that we release for the current branch and current branch for business, it means every 6 months or so, this new release starts over from zero, because the patches, since they're cumulative, start from no fixes and keep working up from there. For LTSB, we only expect to release these about every 3 years. So we're not going to have those resetting events so often. So the size of that cumulative update for LTSB will continue to grow across that entire life cycle. If you expect to run that LTSB release for 10 years, well, you can imagine that line's just going to keep on growing. We expect that it will taper off at some point because the number of fixes will be reduced, but it will still probably have at least one fix per month that needs to be deployed, so the updates will keep growing over time. So what do we do to solve those particular problems? For quality updates, let's talk about those first. The simplest way is through something we call express packages. If you have a PC that's talking to Windows Update, Windows Update for Business, or WSUS directly, all three of those support express packages. These express packages are designed so that the Windows Update agent on the PC doesn't need to download the entire content. Instead, it can just download the specific pieces that have changed for that month. As a result, it only needs to download, say, 50 to 100 megabytes worth of stuff per month. That's a whole lot better than 1 gig. So it's pretty effortless to implement this for the tools that support it. For the tools that don't support it, which would include Configuration Manager and most third-party patching tools, they have to download the entire update locally and then tell the Windows Update agent to install it. So, okay, Express Packages isn't the 100% solution then, so we also have to look at other processes like peer-to-peer as an alternative way to distribute the larger sets of content. With peer-to-peer distribution, we basically do fan-out. So instead of having thousands of PCs all connecting back to a distribution point or a central server across a network connection into your data center, instead they can have one PC on the network segment download it and then start sharing it with all the other PCs on the network. That way you shift the network traffic out to the edges of the network where you have a lot more capacity and have a much easier way of deploying that amount of traffic. We can also throttle that traffic. Most of the tools that we're talking about use bits to do the download. We can put bits policies in place to restrict the rate at which they pull this content to kind of spread it out over a longer period of time. And we can also do scheduled distributions to try to do more of this traffic outside of normal working hours when the network is less busy. For feature updates, it's kind of the same story. Feature updates are deployed really as a bigger quality update. They're still deployed like updates. They just happen to be 3.5 gig. So we still want to do peer-to-peer distribution. We still want to do bandwidth throttling, and we still want to do scheduled distribution. But in addition to that, we are working on trying to implement a limited Delta upgrade feature or capability in Windows, probably later in 2017, where we can shrink that 3.5 gig down to something smaller. The challenge is that something smaller isn't really small. It's still going to be a pretty big package size. We'll talk about that later and really why that is the case. So let's dig into each one of these a little bit more. First, starting with Express Packages. Express Packages contain a set of operating system components. When you apply an update to Windows, it looks at each of the CABS or MSU files that are being installed and sees what operating system components are in there. And then if it has newer versions of them, it will install them. Well, the Windows Update agent is smart enough to look at the header information for each of the CAB files, each of the updates that it's downloading, to figure out, okay, I already have some of the component versions, but there are some new ones in this CAB file that I don't have. It will then download specific byte ranges out of that file containing the components that it wants so that it doesn't need to download the entire update. Now, if you've got a WSUS server, turning this on is pretty easy. We'll take a look at that in a minute, but basically we go into WSUS, check a box, and it downloads these express updates where it knows what the offsets are within the package for each update that it wants. If you're using Windows Update or Windows Update for Business directly, the byte range downloads are done directly from the Windows Update service. How many of you have proxy servers in place? Good number of you. If you do have a proxy server between yourself and whatever is providing these express update packages, that proxy server needs to support byte range transfers where it requests a particular chunk of the file via HTTP, specifying in the headers it only wants this particular chunk. If your proxy server doesn't support byte range transfers, guess what happens? It downloads the whole thing, so it defeats the purpose of having express updates in the first place. Most proxy servers should support that. We have seen a few that don't. So if you're wondering why you see these PCs downloading all this stuff, well, it could possibly be that proxy server. So each month, we add a few components into the package. Then each month, each client only needs to download those particular components. If by chance a client goes for 3 or 4 months without installing, because maybe it was shut down and in a closet, next time it boots up, it's going to have to grab more components, but it's still going to be able to figure out what it needs out of that cumulative update and just download those pieces. So let's briefly look at WSUS to see how we would enable that. In WSUS, in the options, we can configure the update files. All we really need to do to enable this is check the one box, download express installation files. Once that's enabled, it's going to download the original updates. It's also going to download the express updates. So make sure you have enough disk space on your WSUS server before you do this. It's going to double the size of your update repository. That's really the only downside of doing this. It's going to take additional disk space. Well, and it's going to generate additional traffic as it's downloading those additional sets of files. But once that's done, then all your Windows 10 clients are going to be able to grab a much smaller set of content, that 100 megabytes or so per month. Now, if you think that, oh, I can go in and do this on my WSUS server that's functioning as a SUP for my configuration manager environment, don't, because Config Manager will just ignore the express update files. It'll use a whole bunch of additional disk space, but it won't actually be able to consume those yet. That's something that's being worked on. So it's easy to enable. Once that's enabled, then all of your WSUS managed clients can be much more efficient at what they download. That works great for the quality updates, those monthly updates that come out every month on Patch Tuesday. Doesn't really do any good for feature updates because they're completely new, so there's no delta that can be done there. So generally, when we talk about distributing content using peer-to-peer, we have a bunch of different options, but the goal is always the same. The goal is to shift the traffic away from the data center, away from the distribution point, away from the central part of the network, out to the edges. When we do that, we can shift 90% of the traffic out to the edges of the network and relieve the central network capacity bottlenecks that would happen. In the case of WSUS and Config Manager, branch cache works really well. Andreas has a session Friday talking a lot more about branch cache, so you can learn a lot more from him in that session. We'll talk about it briefly here, but branch cache is one of those things that's really easy to set up and has some immediate benefits because it can start doing that peer-to-peer sharing throughout your network. The biggest challenge with branch cache has typically been seeing the result, being able to tell that it's actually doing something. I know Andreas has also pointed out that we've had some challenges around promoting it and making it clear when you can use branch cache, but it is included in Windows 10 Enterprise, the full branch cache feature set. It's also included in Pro to do bits transfers. Bits transfers are really what we're talking about here because the Windows Update agent always does bits transfers. So enough of the branch cache capability is present in Windows 10 Pro in order to support this. So we've got branch cache, which works great with WSUS and Config Manager. Then we have another capability called delivery optimization. Delivery optimization is brand new in Windows 10. It's an internet-based service that gets referrals Well, the client talks to it and asks for referrals to other PCs on the internal network that might have already downloaded the content from the Windows Update server. And if it finds some available peers, it will grab the content from there instead of downloading it. That works great with Windows Update and Windows Update for Business. One thing you might not realize is it's also being used with WSUS. So if you have a Windows 10 PC running 1511 or 1607, it will go out to WSUS to figure out what updates it needs. But before it tries to download them from WSUS, it will first ask the delivery optimization service in the cloud, are there any peers on my network that already have this? If so, I'll grab the content from them rather than bothering the WSUS server. So if you start to notice the traffic to your WSUS server is dying down, that's probably what's going on. It's using delivery optimization. It makes a quick request to the internet, gets back a list of computers by their IP address to know that it can reach out to those other PCs. Now, we might want to do some configuration around delivery optimization. We'll talk a little bit more about that just to show some of the options that are available there. The Config Manager team is also working on their own peer caching capability, which is another peer-to-peer mechanism where one Config Manager client can download the entire package content that's needed and then share that content with other Config Manager clients. They implemented that probably a couple of years ago to support OS deployment running in Windows PE, but they hadn't supported it in the full OS to distribute content like feature updates and quality updates. With the current technical previews that are out, including the one that I think was just released yesterday, they have this now enabled for the full operating system so that you can download any content and share it among peers. So that's an option as well. There are pros and cons between branch cache, delivery optimization, and Config Manager peer caching. So you'll have to look in detail at the capabilities of each one of those to figure out which one makes most sense in your environment. But definitely look to implement one of those to be able to shift out the content. When we talk about bits throttling, we're really talking about simple policy settings. We can put a policy in place for bits downloads to say how much network bandwidth each PC can consume. So we can limit this for all background transfers, which are what's being used for Windows Update and for Configuration Manager, to say slow that down. We don't want that to negatively impact the performance of our network. We can specify time ranges if we want, outside of that, we want to make sure to control that rate. Now, one of the interesting things about this particular policy is it only applies for content coming from the server. If it's content coming from a peer, because we've enabled branch cache, that can go at full speed. So there are some interesting behaviors related to this. Those are the things that Andreas will get into in great detail. But you just need to understand how it works, how it behaves, and then figure out how do I want to tweak that, how do I want to configure that within my own environment. If you're using something like System Center Configuration Manager, you also get a lot of controls around when you distribute this content, both from site to site, as well as from when the PCs actually go to download it. You can be very explicit on when that content should be made available to the PCs, when they should start downloading it, when they should install it. So definitely look at those capabilities inside a Configuration Manager if you're using it to restrict the time frames. Now, we've also enabled a simple policy in Windows 10 called Active Hours that's present in Windows 10 1607 to give you some control over this as well, primarily to control when the PC would reboot, but it also then impacts when the updates are installed. But you can specify that this PC is typically in use during these hours, and if you see that a new update show up, just wait until after those hours to deal with it. Same thing's available in Config Manager with maintenance windows. You can specify for each PC that you want to limit the updates to just that particular period of time. Delivery optimization is probably something we could spend another entire session on. It's a internet service that clients talk to before they actually download a particular feature update or quality update. It will keep track of all the PCs that have downloaded any particular piece of content so that when the next client asks for something, it could say, oh, okay, I see that there are some other clients available to you that have this content instead. So it goes through that process as an intermediary in every download to figure out where can it get this content instead. The challenge is that you might want to change the way this behaves. By default, the PCs will be configured to share with any machine on the internet. Now, any machine on the internet really means any PC that I might be able to get to on the internet. So imagine you're sitting in a Starbucks. That would mean every other PC that happens to be in that Starbucks at that particular point in time that has the same content. If in your corporate network, though, you probably don't want it to behave that way. You want it to behave a little bit more controlled. So we do provide additional policies to tweak that behavior. And in fact, that behavior is tweaked for the enterprise SKU. The enterprise SKU by default is configured for LAN mode, where LAN mode really means just look at the PCs on a particular subnet. We can even control that farther. We could say, no, I want to operate in group mode. I can configure delivery optimization to look at groups of PCs. If I'm using Windows 10, 15, 11, group mode is used in combination with a group ID, which is just a GUID that you could apply to each PC to say, I want to group these PCs together and these PCs together and this third group together. In Windows 10 1607, we simplified that so that group mode by default uses the AD site to establish a group. So it will only share within your AD site boundaries. But if, let's say you're using branch cache. If you're using branch cache, you may want to allow it to perform the peer-to-peer sharing rather than having delivery optimization do it. So there are different download modes available to say, no, I don't want to use delivery optimization. Instead, I'm going to just use bits and do the transfers that way. If we look at the policies that are available, if I can wake up my PC. Seems like I go through this every day. Change the power policy back. Wake up. Well, let me continue to work on waking my PC up again. The available download modes allow us to specify that we either want to bypass delivery optimization together, altogether, or we want to configure it to specify that we just want to explicitly use bits. If we're using Windows 10, 15, 11, the policy will only the only policy available is to use HTTP only. So don't use delivery optimization. Instead, just use the old downloading capabilities that were available in the Windows Update Agent, which in turn uses bits. In Windows 10 1607, they added another policy that explicitly says, I want to just use bits. I want to bypass the delivery optimization service and use bits instead. Now that my PC is back, let's look at those policies. If we look under the Windows components, we can see a set of delivery optimization settings with a download mode. We could specify HTTP only for Windows 10 1507 clients to say that we want them to just go directly to whatever source it's trying to download from. In 1607, the preferred option is bypass, where bypass says, bypass mode, do not use delivery optimization and use bits instead. If we wanted to use the group mode, we can just specify group here. And if we wanted to further group the PCs, we could then specify an explicit group ID, which is a GUID to group those PCs together. There are other policies available to restrict the bandwidth, to prefer certain clients over other clients, but we also have rules in place that say, well, we only want to use good PCs as peers. We don't want to overload some PCs that maybe don't have enough resources to act as peers. So we will prefer PCs with 4 gig of RAM or more. We'll make sure that the PCs have sufficient disk space to do the sharing. We'll make sure the PCs aren't on battery. We'll make sure they're not on metered connections. So there's a variety of other rules in place to restrict which clients are considered as peers, but beyond that, you have other controls that you can apply. The specifics of that, you can find in the documentation that we posted here. If we look under optimizing update delivery, there is a section on configuring delivery optimization with some specific scenarios in here to talk about some things that you might want to do, along with descriptions of all the parameters. Like maybe you want to use delivery optimization with group download. It talks about how to do that. Maybe you want to use branch cache instead, so it talks about how to disable that. Maybe you want to set up some preferred cache devices to further restrict which peers are going to be considered. You can set policies related to all of that, and we've tried to document examples of how to do each one of those, both via group policy and also via MDM if you have MDM-managed clients. So delivery optimization overall is a fairly simple service. It does require internet access. If you have firewalls or other things in the way, it will block access to the delivery optimization service, but that doesn't cause any harm. If it can't get to the delivery optimization service, it just falls back to finding the content directly from Windows Update or WSUS or wherever it would normally grab the content from. If by chance you have a private network that doesn't have any internet connectivity at all, you could just go in and set the download mode to bypass, and it would never even try to talk to the service if your networking people get concerned about these attempts to access the internet through a firewall. Well, just bypass it, and it won't do that anymore. Branch cache, then. We already talked about being available in Windows 10 Pro for bits transfers, as well as the full capabilities in enterprise and education. We actually recommend using this in distributed cache mode. When branch cache was originally developed and initially released, it was designed for branch caches, branch offices. In branch offices, you want to get the content out to the branches so that clients within the branches can do sharing. So one PC could be dedicated as a hosted cache, branch cache server of sorts, and then the others could pull from that. But here, we're really looking at within a particular office, even big offices, we want to be able to do fan-out distribution. So in that case, we really want to do distributed mode. We want to have a distributed cache where every PC can act as a cache for every other PC that's out there. So when one PC on a particular subnet gets it, it can share with all the other PCs on that network. Distributed mode is the simplest to set up because all we really need to do is enable two rules and also set up some firewall exceptions. The settings that you need to put in place to do that, you can configure easily via group policy. If we look under administrative templates, network, branch cache. We need to turn on branch cache, and then we need to set the distributed cache mode, set those two policies, and then also enable the firewall rules that go along with that. Firewall rules are predefined, so all you had to do is say you want to add new predefined rules to specify that clients can retrieve content and that they can discover each other. The third one is actually for hosted cache, and we're not using hosted cache, so you don't need to configure that one. Once that's enabled, clients talking to Config Manager, WSUS, or any other branch cache enabled server will start caching things. In the case of Config Manager, to enable branch cache for your distribution points, you just need to go into the Config Manager console and check a box that says use branch cache. In the case of a WSUS server, you need to go into Server Manager and add the branch cache feature. There are some other things that you could do to optimize it, like enabling disk deduplication, so there are some more options for that. Talk to Andreas about those. But once you have that enabled, the clients then are able to use this for getting content. And remember before I said that the biggest challenge really was just seeing if it did any good, being able to see that the caching was being used, that branch cache was doing you some good. What we've done for Windows 10 is we've added some additional event log entries. These event log entries record how many bytes for each bit's transfer came from the server, wherever you were trying to download it from, and how many bytes came from a peer. So you can then easily report on what happened. So you could even do that via a PowerShell script. It's not too hard. In this case, I've got 10 machines out there. I'm looping through each of the 10 machines, but then just querying the event log, looking for all the bits events with event ID 4, which is the final event that says the bits transfer completed. From that, I can get the bytes transferred and the bytes that came from the peer. So if I run that, I can see the results from all 10 of my PCs and see the types of success rates that they get. How much content came from the server versus how much content came from other peers. Generally, it should be 100%. But it's not always going to be 100%. We can see machine 103 didn't quite get 100%. Looks like it only got in the high 90s. The first machine that downloads it might get zero because, well, it couldn't find any peers to get it from. So over time, you see that those percentages should grow as more clients have that content available. In this case, you can see several downloads because I've got multiple updates deployed out to these machines. I've got the cumulative updates for Windows 10. I've got MBSA packages, Adobe Flash updates. All of these different updates then are automatically being cached by my 10 clients, and my 10 clients are then sharing all of that content with other PCs on the network. But being able to see that is really useful. It's useful to be able to prove that branch cache is really buying me something. I can really see what's going on. The delivery optimization team also has looked at this and said, hey, that's useful. We should probably add similar capabilities for delivery optimization. So they're working on some PowerShell support themselves to enable this. If we look at Configuration Manager, they're trying to take this even one step further. So they have added some capabilities in their technical preview, not yet available in the released current branch version, to show you for all the content that's being downloaded, where did it come from? Did it come from the distribution point? Did it come from the cloud? Did it come from branch cache? Or is it using the new Config Manager peer caching mechanism? So at a glance, I can see what came from where. I have 10 clients on this environment too, separate from my other one. And all the content coming from my Config Manager server, 62.5% of it came via branch cache, which means one client downloaded it and then shared it with a whole bunch of other clients, so they didn't need to even talk to the DP to get that particular content. So we're trying to expose this data really to show the efficiency of this In this case, I hadn't even enabled some of the options yet. So over time, I would expect that 62.5 to continue going up to the point where it could probably get to maybe 90%, depending on the type of content that I'm distributing. So very useful to enable that in Config Manager for WSUS for all of this content distribution. So the reporting capabilities built in, that's what we just looked at for Config Manager. The Two Pint guys, including Andreas, have been working on reporting solutions of their own to tie in this same sorts of data. So if you're running older versions of Config Manager, you can still do this. You can just use solutions like that. So check that out, because it really allows you to prove to your bosses and your bosses' bosses that, hey, we set up this cool technology, and this cool technology is now doing peer-to-peer distribution throughout our network. So we talked about technologies, now let's talk about tools. We want to look at the different tools that are available and understand what you, which of those technologies you can use with each one. If you have your PCs pointed directly to Windows Update, you get Express Package support, peer-to-peer support, you can use bits throttling. You can't really do much control beyond active hours, and there's no real advanced capabilities. If we do Windows Update for Business, same basic story, you just get some additional deferral controls. With WSUS, we can add in peer-to-peer with branch cache. We can add in support for express packages. With Config Manager, it gets even more interesting. We have multiple peer-to-peer options. We have throttling capabilities. We can schedule distribution. And we even have the ability to add alternate content providers. Alternate content provider, for those of you who aren't familiar with System Center Configuration Manager, is third-party software that plugs into Config Manager that takes over the content distribution altogether. So maybe you look at bits and branch cache and delivery optimization and Config Manager peer-to-peer and say, nah, that's not advanced enough for me. I want additional capabilities. There are multiple vendors that have hooked in these alternate content providers to do all kinds of fancy things. Multicast distributions, lots of different ways of looking at how do we efficiently spread the content throughout your network so that we can get it to each client without significantly impacting anything. So you can always look at those. We won't talk about those, but they are here this week on the show floor. You can talk with the vendors who provide those advanced capabilities. Now, if you're using other tools, other third-party updating tools, you need to talk to the different vendors for those and figure out what capabilities they provide. Most of them won't be able to support express updates because we don't have the APIs exposed from Windows to enable that. That's the same thing that's getting in the way of Config Manager right now. So that's the first problem that we need to fix. But they do often have peer-to-peer distribution capabilities, throttling capabilities, and scheduling capabilities. But ask your ISV, ask them how you can do this, how you can distribute these large packages throughout your environment. So if we dig into each one of those, Windows Update for Business is Windows Update with a set of policies on top of it that enable you to control when updates are distributed. But from the subject that we're talking about here, you can enable peer-to-peer distribution using delivery optimization, and you can enable throttling using bits, and you can do limited scheduling using active hours. So that gets us the basics that we need to support this. If we're using WSUS, there are some updates needed for WSUS to support feature updates, so make sure that you have those installed. If you install the latest one, which is necessary for Windows 10 1607, because we encrypt those feature update packages, there are some post-processing steps that you need to do on your WSUS server, some manual steps that you need to make sure that WSUS is functioning afterwards. If you skip those steps, you can pretty much guarantee that WSUS won't be functioning afterwards. So definitely read through the blog and the KB article related to that. But once you have that enabled, you can now use WSUS to deliver feature updates. WSUS supports delivery optimization, branch cache, bits throttling, and active hours. It is important to note that if you're using LTSB, we will never publish updated LTSB bits to WSUS. We'll patch it, we'll publish patches for it, but we won't publish the new feature updates or the new releases of LTSB. So if you've got PCs running LTSB 2015 and you want to upgrade them to LTSB 2016, you have to use a media-based approach, maybe a config manager task sequence or something like that. But for CB and CBB releases, we do publish feature updates of all SKUs to WSUS. If you thought that wasn't occurring, maybe you deployed Windows 10 Enterprise 1507, and you never saw WSUS offer 1511 to those PCs. Well, that's because we had a rule in place that said we don't want to offer 1511 to KMS-activated PCs. We've removed that restriction with 1607. The challenge was when we upgraded from 1507 to 1511, we didn't preserve the activation state, so if a PC upgraded off of the corporate network, it might not be able to reactivate. So we put that rule in place to avoid that. We fixed the upgrade problem with the 1607 feature update, so it now does preserve the activation state, and as a result, we removed that restriction. So now if you went into WSUS and approved the feature update for Windows 10 Enterprise 1607, it would successfully deploy to all of your 1507 and 1511 clients. System Center Configuration Manager, we've already talked about this one. We have support for Windows 10 1607 in their Config Manager 1602 release and later, so 1602 or 1606. In order to support the servicing plans for Windows 10, you do need WSUS 4.0, so you need to make sure your servers are running Windows Server 2012 or above. The new servicing plan capabilities basically automate the process of deploying feature updates, the same way you can use automatic deployment rules in Config Manager to automate the deployment of quality updates, the monthly patches. But Config Manager fully supports branch cache. It fully supports their own peer caching, which will come out hopefully in the next current branch release of Config Manager. It supports maintenance windows, deployment scheduling, and alternate content providers that we talked about before. Now, for futures, I mentioned before that we're working on limited Delta upgrade technology. Really what we're looking to do is get the feature update installation process to only grab the things that have changed from one Windows 10 release to the next. The challenge, though, is that's a lot of stuff. If we look at the Windows organization, there are thousands of developers working for months on each one of these releases. So as a result, most of the executable binaries inside of Windows, all the exe files, the DLLs, the sys files, all that stuff, generally changes for each release. So Delta is still going to be pretty big. We hope that we can reduce this by maybe about a gig. So rather than a 3.5 gig download, maybe it will only be around a 2.5 gig download. To support that, we've still got a lot of work to do, so we don't expect that to happen before late 2017, but we are working on that to try to enable that. That will require changes to support this in all the tools that would be looking to deploy these feature updates, whether that's Config Manager, WSUS, Windows Update, any third-party products. They'll all have to make changes to support that. Otherwise, we're back to the old style with the 3.5 gig packages. So that work's going on now. You may see us starting to test that in the insider preview builds. So if you start to notice that, hey, these insider preview builds are installing quickly, well, that's because an insider preview build, if you install them, say, once a week, what's the delta in a week's worth of development time? Not very big, so the delta there is very effective, whereas the delta for the feature updates, when they're finally released to the whole world, is much less impactful. Expanded support for Express updates is something that we've been working on between the Windows team, who needs to create the APIs to enable that, and the Config Manager team, who wants to enable that. So that effort has been underway. They're working hard on trying to get that in place. We think that that should be available sometime earlier in 2017 so that we can then get to the point where we're just doing the changes from month to month. So if you install those gigabyte quality updates, then you really only need to download 100 meg each month rather than a full gigabyte. So that's a big difference, a big impact, and we'll work hard on trying to get that in place. Configuration Manager peer caching, like I mentioned, is in the technical preview builds of Config Manager. Hopefully they'll get that available later this year so that you then have additional options for doing this content sharing. When we talk about comparing these two, it starts to get interesting, well, really three, between branch cache, delivery optimization, and Config Manager peer-to-peer. We could probably do 75 minutes just talking about, well, which one should I do? But mostly, we just want to make sure you do one of them. We want you to have a mechanism in place that can do this content distribution throughout your environment to ease the burden on the network for both the monthly updates and the feature updates that come out about every 6 months. So we looked at some of the documentation, configuring delivery optimization, configuring branch cache. Those are part of the Windows as a Service docs that we talked about before, aka.ms/WAAS. So you can read through those. They'll help you with the step-by-step process on enabling those. Managing updates using Windows Update for Business. If you're interested in kind of shifting away from having an on-prem updating infrastructure and just update your PCs from the cloud, you can use Windows Update for Business to set up deferral policies for groups of PCs, where you could specify, I want this group of PCs to install updates right away, this group after 30 days, this group after 60 days, and go from there. That's all documented with additional details there, and we'll cover that in more detail in tomorrow's session on Windows as a Service. For managing updates with WSUS, same thing. We really just need to make sure you understand how to use existing tools like WSUS and System Center Configuration Manager to do a ringed deployment. So we always talk about deployment rings when we're talking about Windows as a Service. And really, deployment rings are nothing more than groups of computers deployed at different points in time. But you have to understand how to do that with each of the tools. So how do you do that with Windows Update for Business? Well, you create different policies and target different sets of PCs with those policies. So that's entirely done through group policy management. If you're talking about WSUS, it's about creating computer groups in WSUS and targeting different computer groups at different points in time. You can configure computer groups manually in the WSUS console, or you can configure computer groups by doing client-side targeting, where you just tag each PC with a particular registry entry telling WSUS through the update checking mechanism, I want this PC to be in this particular group. Give me the updates for that group. For Configuration Manager, it's just about building collections with the PCs that you want to target at different groups in time, at different points in time, and then creating the servicing plans that say when those times should be. This particular group should go at day zero, this group at day 30, this group at day 47, this group 15 days after CBB is declared. So you get a lot of flexibility on when those particular updates should go out. We do have a variety of other sessions. I've mentioned at least one of them so far, but in addition to Andreas's session on digging into branch cache, there's a session right after lunch, I believe, that talks about how the upgrade process for Windows 10 works. So if you're curious about what that is, check out that session. We have a general Ask the Expert session this afternoon at 2:15. So if you have any questions around deployment, servicing, provisioning, I'll be there, Johan Arwidmark, Michael Nystrom, several members of the engineering team responsible for Windows updates, WSUS, Windows Update for Business. The Config Manager team will be represented. So we'll have a collection of experts there to answer any questions you have. We have tomorrow's session talking about implementing Windows as a service. We kind of touched on bits and pieces of that in this session, but we'll get much deeper. And a session from Microsoft IT that explains how they do this, so what tools they're using to manage updates within their environment. So with that, we've got a few minutes left. Well, let's just open it up for Q&A. If you have any questions related to what we talked about, find a microphone. There's, I think, two of them, one in the center here and one in the middle of the room farther back. Can we get the mic turned on up front?
So, yeah. What would you suggest should we do with Office 365? Patches.
Yeah, so the question is, what should you do with Office 365 patches? It's kind of it depends answer right now. The Configuration Manager team has implemented some integration with Office 365 updating to allow the content to be downloaded from the cloud to Config Manager so that Config Manager can then distribute the content. Beyond that, we'd have to get deeper into the discussion with the Office team. So I'm familiar with the issue, just not necessarily what the resolution to that one is.
Hi, I was wanting to know if there's any mechanism in place to prevent the initial start of the download for these clients through Configuration Manager using Branch Cache. I know in the past that was kind of a hiccup. Everybody would start downloading them, and after one client got it, they may finish up their download from the server, or they may cut over. And is there anything that we can say definitively, don't get it, and you know, multiple clients don't take the content from the server on the same subnet?
Yeah, and there are a variety of ways to address those challenges. I mean, the easiest way is to pre-stage the content on at least one machine on each segment. So if you can identify a collection of PCs that have that content, you can distribute the content out to them in advance. The other thing that you can do, which kind of implicitly does that, is a ring deployment of updates. So instead of saying, I want to deploy this update to every single PC in my environment, you start on day zero and say, I want to deploy it to IT. On day two, you might deploy it to all of your pilot population, which might be 10 to 20% of the PCs. And you keep expanding beyond that. So as a result, your available peers keeps expanding along with that. So over time, you end up with a very large population of peers. When you start off initially, yeah, most of the clients are going to go out to the DPs and pull the content down. But as you move along, you can get more and more efficient.
The amount of disk space used by the new servicing model is crippling for some machines. Are there any plans to optimize that, maybe by introducing workstation-level dedupe technology?
To use what kind of technology?
So in server, we have deduplication, which is fantastic.
Oh, deduplication? It kind of depends by technology. If you look at Branch Cache automatically is doing deduplication at the, I think, 64K block level. So it does a pretty good job of deduplicating data that way. The delivery optimization service and the peer-to-peer Config Manager distribution doesn't do any type of deduplication on the client side. So that becomes one of those discussions around trade-offs and capabilities. If you have PCs that don't necessarily have enough disk space, well, don't make those caching peers. Make those just consumers rather than contributors.
I meant more like the Windows.old folder that gets created when you go through the upgrade process. So you've got that as well as the installation files. You require a fairly big chunk of free space to even do the upgrade. And then if it has gone through, that Windows.old folder, it's mostly duplicates of stuff that they've got in the live Windows environment.
Yeah. It's hard to hear that, because I hear the sound coming from the sides, even though you're 10 feet in front of me. So I didn't quite catch all of that one, but.
I'm really complaining about the Windows.old folder.
Oh, Windows.old, yes. And Windows.old gets created by each feature update installation. It's automatically deleted with 15.11 after 30 days. We changed that in 16.07 to 10 days. Some people don't like the change because when that gets deleted, it means you can't roll back anymore. So it did shorten. You can manually clean that up. If you're doing a media-based installation, you can also specify a command line switch that says delete it as soon as the upgrade's done. But it really only takes up about 8 to 10 gig worth of space. It might look like it's much bigger than that, but it's all hard links. So the upgrade process actually just hard links the entire OS into Windows.old. Then it deletes the original operating system files and lays down the new operating system image. The new operating system image is 8 to 10 gig. So that's how you get that delta. It just looks like it's using a complete copy of the operating system, including all the apps and data, but it's not. It's really just the delta between the old OS, the new OS, and all the other files that were present there.
So one question I have is, occasionally we have to exclude a certain patch from either a group of computers or all computers for functionality within our organization.
Right.
And now all the patches are combined into one big patch and then made cumulative going forward.
Right.
How would we do that in the future if we need to exclude one thing, one patch? Are we just screwed, or how does that work?
Yeah, generally we would suggest that if you run into an issue with the patch, call support. And the goal is to resolve that issue as quickly as possible, within a week or two, to try to figure out what's causing it. Is it something that we need to fix in Windows? Is it something we need to work with an ISV to fix? But regardless, try to drive that to a resolution as quickly as possible. What we've seen in the past, like with Windows 7, is that you might run into one security update that caused that issue, so you don't deploy that one ever. That's not good, because you're leaving a security vulnerability for years. So leaving 4 or 5 security vulnerabilities for a few weeks hopefully is a good trade-off, that we want to be able to close those issues, resolve those issues, and get them rolled into the next cumulative update so that when the next one comes around, we've solved that issue and you can move forward from there. So definitely open a case and try to pursue that. It's also worth mentioning that we don't just release updates on Patch Tuesday. We also release updates on other Tuesdays, like the 3rd and 4th Tuesdays of the month, because that gives you more time to validate the non-security fixes. Patch Tuesday, we only add new security fixes. The 3rd Tuesday, we only add new non-security fixes. The 4th Tuesday, if we did one, we would only do new non-security fixes. 1st Tuesday, new non-security fixes. If you can deploy each one of those to at least a subset of the PCs, it lets you find issues with non-security fixes earlier in the cycle. For security fixes, we have a program called SUVP, Security Update, it's either verification or validation, I always forget, program. You can sign up for that one and sign an NDA agreement, and we'll give you pre-release security updates, like 1 to 2 weeks before they're released to the general population. Requires an NDA because effectively we're telling you about security fixes that we haven't yet told the public about. But you can deploy those inside of your organization, again, to a subset of the PCs, maybe 5 to 10%, just to see if they cause any issues. If they cause any issues, you have a direct phone line back to the engineering team. They will work to then resolve those issues before they even release that security update to the general population. So they're quickly going through updates to those packages before they're released. It's not uncommon for them to go through 3 or 4 revisions of the package based on feedback that they're getting from SUVP customers. So hopefully between those two, we can try to reduce that as much as possible. If you happen to be interested in SUVP, send me an email or the account team an email, and they can get you signed up for that program to give you that extra time for security updates too.
Will any of these features, like Express Packages, work with Windows 10 mobile enterprise devices reporting to an on-prem WSUS environment? Each monthly update is like a good 2 to 3.5 gigs of data. Multiply that by thousands of devices, you have a lot of data if it move across the wire.
Yeah, the mobile devices, like if we're talking phone devices, mm-hmm. like Windows 10 mobile already does that. It does a delta upgrade, so it's only going to pull down the changed files. On the back end, we're basically storing a delta, so if you're 5 versions back, well, we've stored all 5 deltas back on the server, so we know which one to download to the device. So we should already be optimizing that download. That's why the download might be 500 meg instead of a gig, because we can just pull down the delta. Now, the upgrade process overall on the mobile device is kind of like an in-place upgrade of lay down the new image, reboot the device, and then migrate everything forward. So you always see the performing step 1 of 22 process as it goes through that. But it's still a lot more optimized than the desktop process, mainly because we don't have to worry about data scattered all over the device and applications installed in 25 different ways. On the mobile devices, apps only install one way and the data is only in one place. So we know exactly what needs to be migrated and moved around.
But thank you.
It should be doing a pretty good delta already.
Hey, I had a question about, I know you talked a lot about the cumulative update that's coming out every month, but you haven't talked a lot about I know they announced a security only update that they were going to release each month that only had the updates, security updates for that particular month.
Right.
I think I saw an announcement back in May that they were going to do the same thing each month for non-security updates. I wanted to confirm that. So
yeah,
if we're using like Config Manager, we could still rely on the single security only or single non-security only update each month.
Yeah, for Windows 8.1 and Windows 7, that is the plan, that on Patch Tuesday you would see two updates released, one that's security only containing all the new security updates for that month, and a second update that's a roll-up containing all the new security updates from that month plus all the previous months plus all the non-security updates for previous months. So
okay,
you
so
would
the
see
second...
those two updates show up on Patch Tuesday, and a third update show up the next week on that third Tuesday, where we would then add new non-security updates. We don't want the roll-up to contain new security updates and new non-security updates, so those are separated. Patch Tuesday, just new security stuff. Security only has this month's security updates. The roll-up has this month's security updates, plus all the older updates back to, I think it's back to September. It won't go back any further than that. Over time, then, they do plan on adding older fixes into that roll-up, so eventually it becomes a fully cumulative roll-up, but it will slowly grow over time to that.
So is Windows 10 not going to use that same model?
Windows 10 is not going to change. Windows 10 is still the fully cumulative model, where we have one update released on Patch Tuesday containing all security and non-security updates released up to that point in time. We then typically do a third Tuesday update that adds new non-security updates. We get into that same rhythm with Windows 10.
Okay.
So there will be differences between the 7 and 8.1 implementation and the 10 implementation. For those that just deploy security updates, you can use the security only package for Windows 7 and 8.1 and continue status quo.
Okay.
If you deploy all updates today, you'll want to use the roll-ups, but you then need to take into account some of the things that we talked about here with the updates growing over time, and being able to do the express updates to download just the changes has certain dependencies, like doesn't work with Config Manager.
Yeah, we have a similar situation as the guy a couple people ago where, you know, with application compatibility and stuff, we're routinely removing updates, unfortunately, causing the fragmentation that I know you're talking about. So, I mean, we're probably going to be forced into a position to basically go with the security-only updates, I think, or a slower, you know, rhythm for getting using a cumulative update.
Yeah, and we're trying to document more of that to show operationally what that would look like if you do security updates only, if you do all updates today, and if you selectively install fixes. Because we don't expect to release individual hot fixes for, say, a new bug that we find in Windows 7. We'll put it into the next rollup. Well, if you don't routinely deploy the rollups, and now you want that one new fix, guess what? You're going to get 300 other fixes with it. So just being able to explain those three primary scenarios is something that we're working on publishing. But there have been some tweaks to the process that they've been doing over the last few weeks, so we haven't been able to finalize that yet. But hopefully sometime next week we'll be able to get that published.
Perfect. Okay. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Hi. We have a large mobile workforce in our environment. We have ruggedized laptops that connect via a VPN solution called NetMotion. Right now, they all go to a central location, a central distribution point for SCCM. And I'm not sure how we would get our update up to them based on their, I don't think peer-to-peer would be an answer. I don't know how would we effectively upgrade them to Windows 10 and apply updates to Windows 10.
So you have a large group of machines that today connects to a central location?
Right. Via VPN, we have a NetMotion product. It has two servers, failover servers. All the traffic goes through that server to verify authentication that the machine is authorized to be on our network. And they're on our network all the time, even when they're on cellular. I mean, they go in and out of coverage, but I'm not quite sure how the servicing model would work with those platforms.
Yeah, the servicing over metered connections is particularly challenging, just due to the size. For the monthly updates, if you can get to a solution that uses the express updates, that's not too bad, because that's more like 100 meg per month. The feature updates are more challenging. So for those, you can defer those updates for a period of time. It just becomes a question of, is there a time when you could do that? So are the PCs ever connected to a higher speed network where you could do that? Like, do they come into the office for a quarterly meeting or a semi-annual meeting or something like that? To be able to try to take care of those larger packages at that point in time.
Well, that would be organized. I mean, they've done it before. We could send out messages to have them come in on cycles where they could get the update.
If they're on a metered network and they never connect to something higher speed, you're either going to have to throttle the downloads and have it take a very long time or use an LTSB release that's not going to be updated. You have to look at some of the devices and say, are these special purpose devices, like used by a field servicing organization or a field sales organization where they're just never connected to a high-speed network? Maybe those are specialized enough that LTSB is a better approach.
Thank you.
Hi, great session, thank you. I have a similar question. We have all the mobile clients. So if I'm downloading, my peer is a laptop and I'm downloading bits and that laptop walks away, does it connect to another peer and resume or would it start all over again?
It depends on the solution. In the case of branch cache, it can use multiple peers. In the case of delivery optimization, it can use multiple peers. In the case of Config Manager peer cache, I don't know the answer to that question. It will certainly latch onto one and try to grab all the content from that one, but if that one goes away, will it pick another one? I think it will revert back to the DP.
But branch cache would.
Branch cache is always advertising
always. And
out
always
for
resuming.
Who has this block of data, because not all clients are going to have all blocks, so it expects to use multiple clients.
Awesome. Thanks.
Hi. We're getting a lot more Microsoft Surfaces and other similar devices in our organization, which are using the new modern standby for power saving and things like that. And I was just wondering if there are any considerations about the right approach to take for those for being able to reduce the downloads, for one thing, because if a device is not powered up, then obviously its peers can't talk to it.
Yeah, generally, a machine in standby won't download updates using the Windows Update agent. The Config Manager client, I believe, behaves the same way, that it's not running when the machine is in standby, because the agents involved aren't modern applications. They're not throttled. So it should be okay. The only challenge typically is if you want them to do that. So let's say you are in a school and there's a classroom full of PCs and you want them to patch overnight, but they go to sleep before night happens. So you really want to wake them up in order to do the patching so that they're not going to then do it when the machine wakes up the next morning when a student picks it up and turns it on. So there are some challenges like that. With some of the shared PC mode pieces, we've started doing policy tweaks to alter the behaviors, like don't ever go to standby, which is okay, but not if you want to have long battery life. So there are definitely trade-offs and complications with that. I'm not sure that there's a great answer to that, but we at least can arrange with the active hours policies that if we do download and install that update when the machine is turned on at 8 a.m. in the morning, that we won't reboot the machine until outside of the active hours. So it's not a perfect scenario, but we keep working at it. Yeah, I think we're about out of time anyway, so why don't we take the rest of the questions up front? I'll keep answering as long as anyone has questions, and thanks for everyone else who attended. If you want to hear the answers, feel free to come up.